If one more label try to stop me, it's gonna be some dreadhead niggas in your lobby.
Thank you for tuning in to The Clear Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC, and I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. I'm going to sing you a song.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
This podcast is all about music today. That's what we're doing. Music! And starting with what is, of course, the biggest event of the year when it comes to music, the Grammy Awards, were on Sunday. I think they even, like, enjoyed a revival. I didn't watch them. But I feel like a lot of people who haven't been watching them the last years watch them. And it was interesting because there were, like, some major upsets. Like, for example, Megadeth won for Best Metal Album of the Year instead of Korn. I was really confused.
That was the big upset for you? That was what was happening for you?
I was like, I didn't even realize that Megadeth was still making music like that.
I feel like metal is like one of the things, like wine, where the artists get better with time or something. They be old. And they just get more and more angry and rabid. So, you know, maybe the music is better.
And like Justin Bieber made it. He had an album that came out.
Oh,
I didn't know about it. I didn't know. I was confused. I did really like A Sailor's Guide to Earth, Sturgill Simpson. I was a little disappointed that he went out the way he did. I was also a little disappointed that Anderson .Paak didn't win Best New Artist. I'm a huge Anderson .Paak fan.
Also,
I'm no shade at all to the winner, and we'll get to him in a moment. But I was like, oh, Anderson, he's very versatile. He has a really great album. I kind of felt bad that he didn't take home Best New Artist. I felt like that was his. But it wasn't. It was Chance the Rapper's. And Chance is very interesting. Chance did a great performance. And he got all Jesus Christ and Sex and Love all in one. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Because why not? Jesus Christ said we all are humans. And we have to accept ourselves as that. And Chance reminded us of that in his performance. And then he won Best New Artist. And the upset was when he was like, excuse me, Drake. Excuse me, mentor Kanye, but I'm going to take home this Best Rap Album of the Year. How'd you feel about
that? Wow.
How about that?
Yeah, and has not sold near an album. Because he gives his stuff online away for free, right. My understanding.
Well, it's not for free, but he did do... So a lot of people felt like it was the Grammys showing that they don't only, you know, prioritize the conventional record industry types. Because Chance the Rapper only streamed this album, The Coloring Book. It was only streamed. However, that it must be said, he had an exclusive deal with Apple Music. So it wasn't like he was playing with peanuts and just put it out on Bandcamp or something. He had an exclusive deal with Apple Music that the album can be streamed on different services now. And not to mention, he did do quite a bit of work on The Life of The Life of Pablo, Kanye West.
Don't get it twisted out. Very different thing.
Is it though? Is that?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. Helicopter twisting wife beaters is still a thing. He did have quite a bit of experience with industry professionals from that work that he did on The Life of Pablo. And I'm sure that it upped his game massively from the mixtape game to like bringing out a polished album. Not that Kanye's album was polished. He like put it out and then he was like, hold up. That wasn't finished. I'm going to put it out again because I feel like I need to work on a few songs. Here we go. Now it's finished. There you go. So that's the reason that album did not win. I'm sure of it. And Views was just kind of, it was a very long album. It was a bit of a rambling album. It wasn't like a coherent.
Very, very unfocused.
Very unfocused album. So, you know, yes.
What What happens after you eat curry chicken for the first time?
Ooh.
I mean, like, look, I love the fusionness of it. I do. And it's really laid back, but it's not what I was expecting.
No.
I feel like it's a coast album. It's like you get to a certain level and, you know, you can just put out a shallow mixtape and, you know.
But that's what's so odd about it. The mixtapes are tighter.
Mm-hmm.
There have been two mixtapes that have come out, unfortunately, with a man named Future. And those have been tighter than Views was. So,
yeah, I mean, like, I think that he was kind of experimenting with some things and a lot of it worked, right? Like, so there were some breakaway songs off of Views, and I think Views grows on you. I mean, it's kind of like that Frank Ocean album, Blonde. Mm-hmm. When I first listened to it, I was like, well, okay, no, this isn't what, you know, I wanted like Channel Orange Part 2, you know? And there were some things that he was doing that was different, and it just kind of broke my heart, and I felt very abandoned and betrayed. And so, but then I went and got really, really into the Solange album. I came back to it just kind of like it was on my cell phone, and so I'm like listening to it, and I was just like, wait. If I just like forget for a moment that this is from Frank Ocean, I love this.
Yeah.
Do you know? But when we like hold artists to what we want from what they've produced for us before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it gets really stifling for them. And, you know, they want to put out some different things. And so that's what he did with Views. And, you know, he's an Illuminati. So, of course.
Okay.
It did very well for him. It did very well for him. He outsold Beyonce on Views.
A lot of people did. What was the historical moment of the evening was when David Bowie, post-mortem, finally got his Grammys for Black Star. He was snubbed at the height of his career, if you will, at the height of his creativity. And post-mortem, they have tried to correct that by giving him, I believe he won, I know of at least two Grammys that Black Star won. Maybe there were more. I'm not sure. It's a very long list. There's a lot of scrolling to do on the website. I can't keep up. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't make it any better, Grammys. You should have done better when the man was alive. You missed the opportunity. You missed the opportunity.
They're missing so many opportunities right now, though.
Well, see, here's the thing. I guess it depends on how you look at it. So I know what you want to talk about.
I'm going to talk about the other
history-making moment. Adele was the first person in Grammy history to sweep the categories of Best Record, Best Song, and Best Album of the Year twice. She did that for her previous album, 21, and she did it again on Sunday for 25. And a lot of people are upset, including Adele, about Best Album of the Year, which many people felt like should have gone to Lemonade by Beyoncé. Now, you know, a lot of people had thoughts around why it went to Adele, mostly around conventional things of record sales and yada, yada, yada. Other people have thoughts that are much more nuanced that have to do with the blatant racism that is apparent to every Black and brown person from the Grammys. But, you know, the director, he came out and he said, we don't have any such thing. That's settled.
Yeah, so we're done with that. I really, you know, there are a lot of artists that have stayed away from the Grammys this year.
Yes.
So Frank Ocean, and he actually wrote something about that on his Tumblr,
uh-huh,
saying that there is a genre bias in the Grammys.
This is why many artists don't want to be categorized as R&B, because mm-hmm, they feel like as R&B artists, they will not be recognized in other categories. Also, Drake stayed away. Drake was too busy.
Drake stayed away.
Doing a concert in Manchester.
Mm-hmm. And I think Kanye stayed away as well,
yeah,
right?
Kanye was not there.
So you got three very, very big recording artists that
nominated as well. Mm-hmm. It wasn't mm-hmm that they weren't nominated this year.
And I would also like to add that people of colors run the Grammys. I mean, like, if you talk about not a behind the scenes in any kind of power position, but I'm talking about that's the only reason people watch.
Right.
People only looking at the Grammys to see what is Rihanna doing, what is Beyonce doing, mm-hmm, what is Bruno Mars doing, what is Tribe Called Quest doing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, did anybody else freaking perform at the Grammys? Because I don't know.
Adele performed and almost
messed up. Yeah, I heard she had a couple tries, right? She had a do-over.
She like had to do over the George Michael tribute. Like, she was out of tune.
So
the timing was off. It was,
yeah, it was so lovable that everybody, you know, it's never her fault, right? Like, so it's like, come on. You, when you're performing on this level.
No, this one was her fault. This was her fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no. But you're not seeing the backlash that would have come down if a Black artist, you know, went to do a Prince tribute, you know, what Michael Jackson, whatever tribute they were doing, and then, you know, couldn't get it right. Like, and, B, you didn't have a dress rehearsal? Like, B, you don't know, like,
and I mean, like, talk about the fact that Mariah Carey
got dirty wrong. Remember that?
Yeah, well, thankfully, she had a show on, she had a performance on Jimmy Kimmel this week and showed everybody, yes, Mariah can still sing. Thank you, Mariah, for doing that. We were worried. But let's talk about this for a moment, because Carlos Santana had the nerve to say that Adele knows how to sing.
Uh-huh.
That's why she won. You know, she doesn't need all that puffing and doing with dancers and all the things around her. She just stands there and sing. Whereas Beyonce needs all the extra because she don't know how to sing.
That's why that's I'm so funny. Glad somebody.
That's funny because the vocals of that Drought and Sandcastle, Love by Drought and Sandcastle were released from the Oshun performance. And guess what, folks? Flawless.
Flawless on one cut. She didn't need no do-overs either.
Flawless live performance, some would even say better than the album. That's how Beyonce sings. So Carlos, thank you though.
Here's the thing. I think that people get very confused because she's so great at dancing, because she's so great at like putting she's on these like dancing, all in
she is a great entertainer.
Yeah, she's an all around performer. So people get very, very confused and then they completely negate all her singing stuff. Also, people don't account for her evolution as a singer. The way she sings now is not the way she sung 10 years ago, right? Like she's worked on her craft. Like it's not something that people really go on that like 18-year-old Destiny's Child first impression.
Right.
Right. So they're not really thinking about Beyonce in a present day context. I think that's very unfortunate. And it's very unfortunate. Yeah, I mean, he issued an apology, sort of like, I ain't trying to get into it.
Like, he only issued that apology after the Beehive came from him.
Yeah, I mean, and the apology doesn't get very specific, right? So It was very clear that he was just like, could y'all just please leave me alone? Sorry for whatever you feel. Yes, I did it. It was wrong.
And it's better than most people. It's better than most people. Yes,
it is better than most people. You know, you're better than George Lopez. He should talk to his homeboy.
I'm sure all the Latinx folks know each other, so just have a little conversation.
Yeah, look, all Black reporters know the congressional.
No, all Black people.
All Black people, yeah. Look, I'm about to set up an appointment with the Congressional Black Caucus to talk about George Lopez and Carlos Santana. And why don't we get their shit together?
And all Maybe Black women Jennifer are Lopez available.
If she could talk to them.
And all Black women are available for administrative tasks, apparently.
Of course.
Hey,
would you like some coffee? Like, I would have loved it if that reporter in the recent presidential press conference has said, hey, while I'm setting up that with the congressional, would you like some coffee? And when will I get paid? Like, you know, like just, I have some paycheck issues. Who do I talk to? I need a raise. I'm getting tasks. So I need a raise.
Right.
Anyway, so back to the Grammys.
But a lot of people were upset with, so there were some mixed opinions about what Adele did, right? So as Adele, you know, goes up to the stage and wins for best album, She is in the heat of the moment. She's shocked. She hadn't expected to win. She said that backstage as well. Backstage, she was much more collected, if you will, but reiterated the same message that Lemonade was her album of the year. And she's basically said, if I recall, you know, what does Beyonce have to do to win fucking album of the year? The criticism, though, kind of feels flawed in this instance. Now, as you know, give me a moment. As you know, I like to call people out when they deserve it. Just peep the Twitter feed from this week. But does Adele really deserve to be called out? Like we say we want allies to speak up. Granted, her speaking up wasn't super thought out, but it was the heat of the moment. And she was saying what she was feeling. Yes, it was the heat. She really did believe she was about to win that award. You can see that.
Okay. I think that Black Girl Dangerous had the best kind of analysis of what the
Indeed.
Critique is coming
I
from.
I appreciate that analysis, but I'm and asking you.
Well, essentially what she said, I'll get to what I feel, is that, you know, it's great that Adele could speak out, but she still walked home with that award, right? Like, so she did not upset anything that happened. Her name is still down as the person that gets that award. She doesn't say, you know what? I'm getting something. I don't feel like I deserve it. I feel like it's an injustice to the person that does deserve it. And I will give up something because of this injustice. And I think that that is this limitation that we have with privileged people, right? Is that they can talk this talk and they can perform like, oh, yes, I'm a great ally. You know, I've said all these things. And it just, you know, contributed to Adele's likability. And I think she is a genuine person. I'm not, you know, hating on Adele. She just happens to be in the spot that she's in, you know, with her whole posse.
Right.
But it just reminds you time and time again, if your white coworker gets a promotion over you and you feel and she knows that you the one that should have gotten it, she's still gonna take that promotion. You know what I mean? Like,
no, that doesn't always happen. That doesn't always happen. There, I can give you a few examples of people you know.
Everything always happens.
No, but the thing, but what I'm saying is, with my critique of this critique is, we have the example, and I'm not going to go into detail because it's a very specific example. We have the example of a white gender queer person who gave up their position as professorship to allow a Black woman to take over for her for a while. It did not change the policies of the university. The person was very loud about it. The professor who gave up their position was very loud about it. And the professor who came in, she was very loud about what was happening and what was behind it. And it didn't change any policies at the university. There was a lot of talk around it. And at the end of the day, when the Black woman was ready to move on, she moved on. And the professor who came back to their position came back to it. So even if Adele in that moment would have been like, this is yours, Beyonce, it still won't say Beyonce's name on it.
Yeah. And then there still be those structural issues that caused, you know, Adele to win that award in the first place,
exactly.
Right?
The voting members are old white men, the majority of them.
Right. I think that we can never, ever underestimate symbolism. I think that it says something to have an action be connected to your values. I mean, like, especially in our political moment right now, you have people who have said, these are our set of values. And now they're being given opportunities to act on those values. And they're just not. They're just not, right? So you find out that these values were very conditional, that these values weren't even real values at all, because they're not really connected to any kind of tangible action when they have the power and ability to act in that moment. I think that that's really problematic. And that's what we see from a larger community. I think that the critique about Adele speaking in that moment is it mirrors the critique that Women's March had, right? It's like, where we've been, I mean, like, of course, you know, like, why are you talking now? Like, I mean, like, there's a lot of this feeling of like, you know, of course you may have something to say, but it's not connected to anything that you're going to change in your life, because you don't have to change anything in your life.
Well, I'm not going to say that she's not going to change anything in her life, but I would like to throw out just a little fact that Hello is not her song. It's a stolen song. Anyone who claims that it's not a stolen song is wrong. And for it to win best song and best record is really annoying to me. Like, I would just like to put that on the
record. Who's she steal from?
Lionel Richie.
Hello.
Yes. That is a stolen song. I'm sorry. It's not an original song. And there and when that was, when she was approached by that, she said that's not the case. She doesn't see it. It's not the same song. People have won in court for a lot less.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they've squashed it or taken care of it. I don't know. I haven't followed up on it, but it's not her song. So
yeah, maybe Lionel's Richie estate needs to talk to Marvin Gaye estate, because they don't play. Marvin Gaye estate don't play. Maybe in the courts.
And Lionel is still alive and well and making albums. So, you know, he could if he wanted to. I would just like to throw out one last little bit. Oh my gosh, Bruno Mars. Can we just talk about, I didn't even know he had those types of guitar skills. His Prince tribute was just fire.
You know, he's a star child. He's a star child. He's just happy. I mean, like, Bruno is everybody's dream of, you know, just a beautiful short man.
Hey. How about just a beautiful man?
Without a Napoleon complex.
Let's just say down beautiful man, period. There we go. If you haven't looked at it, check it out. The Grammys tribute to Prince was just perfect. The time opened with Jungle Love, which of course is technically their song, but if you're a fan of Purple Rain like I am, you know that that absolutely belongs to Prince as well. And then Mars came out in the purple blazer sparkling and did me some Let's Go Crazy. Check it out. In our second segment, I would like to talk about Black Queer History Month. Because, as I've stated, it's queer, it's LGBTQ History Month here in the UK, it's Black History Month in the States. Let's put it together in that beautiful intersectional way. And keeping it with music, I want to talk about Black queer music. And I want to start with a very interesting interview that Queen Latifah gave. Queen Latifah, celebrated rapper, singer, actor, Queen Latifah, who we all love most. Probably most, if you did like a survey, it would definitely be Set It Off, right? Queen Latifah.
Living Single.
Living Single was dope, yes. Everybody loved Living Single, but I feel like Set It Off has a further reach than Living Single. I feel like Living Single was kind of like girlfriends, and that was a thing that had a really specific demographic. And Set It Off has been watched by more millions. So Tracee Ellis Ross, who I'm in love with, was doing an interview for InStyle where she interviewed Queen Latifah, and Queen Latifah said that she found it hardest to play her role in Set It Off, Cleo. Now, we all know that Jada Pinkett Smith initially auditioned for that. I don't see it. I'm not sure how Jada saw it, but cute.
I see it. I see it.
I didn't say I don't see Jada queer. I said I don't see, like,
Queen in that role.
She might have done a great job, but Queen Latifah like made that role for real, for real. And Queen Latifah had the nerve to say that she was worried about taking on that role because of her younger siblings encountering ridicule and bullying in school. So she talked to them ahead, explained to them that she would be playing a gay character, and they were prepared for it, and they did. They did actually find themselves confronted with ridicule. But really? Really, Queen Latifah? Like, that's the big reveal of this interview? To reveal this after you've played a role like Bessie
this
Smith.
Puts a lot in... Bessie. This puts a lot in perspective.
Does it? Let me hear.
It does.
This is why she's been in the closet all these years?
She is in the closet, not in the closet. So
she's waving from the closet.
She's waving
threshold.
From the closet. Yeah, she won't come out and say the words, I am gay.
Okay.
She won't parade her relationship around, but she's not hiding too much. And she doesn't shy away from gay people the way that she used to shy away. Like, she now speaks at Pride, this kind of thing. And she says these kind of things that are sort of coded like, you are my people at Pride.
Yes.
And we all know what that means. And there are photos of her hugging on some luscious lady lovers. We all know what the deal is with Queen Latifah.
Do we? But what would it change for her to say the word, I am a lesbian?
It seems to me that it's much more of an internal struggle than it has to do with her career. Because now she has examples, Ellen being a great one, of coming out, and it's fine. It's not an issue for people.
And she's done than Ellen. Like, she's had the
she's
talk
done
show.
More
she's
than
had
Ellen.
The, she yeah. has. She's had the daytime talk show. She's played a variety of roles. You know, she had that ridiculous film where Common was her lover. I mean, it's not that she's not playing roles where she is the desire of some random dude.
Right. What it puts into perspective is her feelings of how pervasive and omnipresent homophobia is and how dangerous it is. And maybe it's been real and present danger for her in ways that it hasn't been for an Ellen. I don't know. Like, we don't know her story, but she is who she is. I really appreciate Queen Latifah for who she is. And she had a point about that she made a while ago that I'm doing my job. You get this acting, you get this thing. I didn't sign up to have my pr- private life under a microscope.
And I completely agree with that. And she's not the only person to say that, right? There are a lot of not only queer, but also many queer actors who've said something similar. Not everyone is Kristen Stewart, who finds their queerness late in her 20s and then feels the need to put it on show for everyone. Right.
For as long as it exists.
Ellen did the upgrade. She was like, bye, Anne.
She did a total upgrade. She was like, okay, Portia. Miss X gang. So I think it's a layered thing. I think it's part of her struggle with celebrity status, which isn't particular to Queen Latifah.
No.
I can't imagine people being interested in my jaunt to the gym, like I'm walking to the gym or me at the grocery store. I can't imagine the level of pressure and intimidation that would put on you. I think another layer is her concern for her family and the effect that it might have on them.
Well, I can't and people imagine that, are that close is to her. A point anymore after she's played Bessie Smith. Like that can't that can't even be the argument anymore. And I did want to talk about these music legends because it is our music podcast. I'm asking myself, what is the lesson from people who now are much more well-known than when I held a presentation on them years ago when I talked about the women of the Harlem Renaissance who often don't get nearly as much attention. A little bit more today, I will admit. But, you know, everyone knows Langston Hughes. Everyone knows the name. Everyone knows that he was the man. When it came to the Harlem Renaissance, he was one of the most prominent figures of the Harlem Renaissance, and he was gay. He was openly gay. But there was a time where people didn't know the names, or, you know, talking about general audiences, not people who read. There was a time where people didn't know the names Ma Rainey, Bessie Smith, and Gladys Bentley, right? Gladys Bentley probably didn't consider it as such, but often dressed as a drag king. She did the top hat, the tuxedo. She was known for flirting viciously. I don't know if it was necessarily consensually with women in the audience. Her lyrics were very clear, but so were Ma Rainey's and Bessie Smith, right? So Ma Rainey, who is kind of Ma, right? The mother of ushering in blues for us. She sang about it often. And August Wilson even made a play about it. Ma Rainey's Black Bottom. She sang about it often, and I believe she was even arrested at some point because of it. And the thing, you know, they had these tricks that they did in order to kind of cover their asses a little bit, that they couldn't be charged because someone else was writing the lyrics and they were just changing them up a little bit. So I'm wondering, with people like Ma Rainey and Bessie Smith, who kind of were out but not out, who were very present, omnipresent during the Harlem Renaissance, but don't get nearly as much attention as other queer figures of Harlem Renaissance, where we are today when we look back on those people, when we look at music specifically, what women are doing what they did, are openly staying out of the closet, giving us the filthy lyrics that we like.
Well, what's the tea on Missy?
Well, Missy, in my opinion, when Missy talks about, and she can be very vulgar when she talks about things, so it does seem to be gendered that a man is doing it.
So we know Angel Hayes, who isn't as well known, is queer. Nicki Minaj had one for the time.
So I have some beef with Nicki. Nicki might have come back out of the closet, but long time ago, there's this great radio interview where she's still kind of figuring out her persona, but she's already Barbie. And she's kind of like twirling with her hair and doing that little voice she does. And someone says, oh, so you like to go to the strip club, right? Because she's talking to an Atlanta radio. And she's like, yeah. And they're asking her questions and it comes out eventually that she's there for the ladies. She ain't there for the men, right? Shortly after that interview, she blows up. She's asked something similar and says she was just joking. But of course, if you look at a video like Anaconda, there seems to be no doubt her love for the female body. So it's really hard to say. I don't know. But I wouldn't put her in a class of Ma Rainey, Bessie Smith, openly taught. Like normally she's telling a dude he got to eat booty and things. She's not really saying that she's eating a woman's booty.
Yeah, I think the cloak and dagger with, that people have had with their sexuality makes it hard to tell, because I think that there are people that are queer but may end up in a heterosexual relationship, or as soon as they end up in a heterosexual relationship, there's this sense of, oh, see, that was just a phase. Right. MC Light. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about MC Light.
Shocking. For those of
Wasn't
you-
that shocking?
I don't know if we've talked about it on here already, but MC Light posted a picture on her Instagram, and she said, basically, thank the Lord for finally delivering her the partner she had sought all this time. Now, if those rumors are true, that her and Janelle Monáe were getting together at some point, that had to be especially hurtful to Janelle. That really
Well, any woman that she's ever been with, any woman, Moni Love, I don't know. I mean, there's rumors. Who knows? Janet, I don't know. Who she been with? These are just ideas I've had, fantasies I've had in my head. I don't know if these are real, but any woman that she's been with, and I know she's been with women, I would bet on that.
I would definitely bet on that. So what does that mean for like Black queer women in the music industry today? Like, we went from a time of having loads of music. And I'm not saying that that means that the person themselves were queer musicians, but we definitely had a lot of music coming from people like Billie Holiday, who was definitely queer. Josephine Baker, even Ethel Waters. This is like early 20th century. But even if you look into like the later times, you had people who maybe are a little less interesting making music that was very proudly, radically free and queer. And now when I feel like, when I look at our artists, I'm like, there's a lot of sex, but it doesn't feel free and queer.
What has gotten less free is people's control over their own image. Now we have a pop machine where you have a team that tells you everything. They tell you what you should wear, and they even tell you who your partner should be, who you should be seen with. These things are very calculated. I think that one of the greatest modern examples that we've seen of calculated courtship and as a publicity stunt has been Taylor Swift. I think that's been a lot of her entanglements and breakups and then entanglements again are very calculated. Like, B is always with somebody that has something coming out. It's always with somebody on the verge of something.
Didn't one dude really put her on blast about that, though? Like, one dude that she dated? Didn't he kind of, I don't know if he took it back, but I feel like he said some things about that actually being what she does.
Yeah, she's a fame monster. That's what she does. That's who she is. Because at the end of the day, when you got real love happening, you got Rosario Dawson hanging out with some random comedian.
Right.
Like, why not me, Rosario? Because you know what my screensaver is now. Come on. Okay.
I'm
in my feelings about that. That's what happens when real love happens, I guess. It's you don't necessarily get with whoever is your counterpart in fame and whoever there's going to be the most buzz about.
Right.
So these movies.
Or like Queen Latifah and her, her personal trainer.
Yes, that personal trainer. Mm-hmm. Click, click, click to that. Shoot. I get, love doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get with the next big thing or the next, one celebrity over or the only other queer celebrity that you know.
Right.
So when you have these pop machines pushing these people in the direction of your image has to be very controlled, all the reveals have to come at such a specific time. This is why people are very responsive to artists like Frank Ocean, who comes out in a very personal, rambling Tumblr blog.
Yeah.
That is that missing authenticity. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, I love that there isn't this element of shame that there used to be. For some people, especially personally, if they were in the closet and they did not get to control their reveal and get to tell their friends and family first, there could be a lot of shame for them personally. Mm-hmm. But I think that on a cultural level, it doesn't mean the end of you. I think the pop machine really forces everybody, heterosexual people, queer people, into a bind. They're not just signing up to have their fashion choices made for them. In some ways, they are having their romantic choices made for them.
And in our final segment, what are we excited about? What are we looking forward to?
I'm really excited about the focus that a lot of people have put on queer people during this Black History Month. It has been amazing. I'm excited about the Black Gay Slay
hashtag.
It was absolutely great. I'm excited that people are using the opportunity of Valentine's Day to critique the supremacy that we all place on romantic love over all other kinds of love. There's an anti-Valentine's Day ball here happening, a queer party happening here in Vienna. So I'm excited about that. What are you excited about?
You know, I just have to speak on this anti-Valentine's Day thing for a minute. Because a lot of articles were published this year, it felt like more than in other years, about the origins of Valentine's Day and how they are quite murky, they're a little bit dark, and they're mixed. And I just wonder, why is it important to focus on some perceived heteronormativity of Valentine's Day when most people aren't really living that life today? Like, why not just celebrate the opportunity to non-commercially is fine, you know, tell someone I love you. How many people do that on a regular basis? Very, very few. And it's not even about romantic love, what I'm saying. Like, it's very rare that, especially in this age of social media, that we really say it. Like, we have our hearts and we have our likes and we have our follows. But how often do I tell someone, you mean a lot to me. Your friendship really gets me through the rough times or whatever, whatever. I think Valentine's Day is a great opportunity and reminder to feel less inhibited at least one day of the year to openly express to loved ones and partners and whoever else. You know what? Your relationship and your friendship and your whatever means something to me. Thank you. What's wrong with that? I like it. And to ourselves as well. Taking a moment to do something nice for ourselves, saying, because often we find ourselves just like eating chocolate because we need something to eat really quickly, or we need that energy, or we're trying to push some feeling away. But on Valentine's Day, I see people who are single, for example, saying, I bought myself this really nice piece of chocolate, and I bought myself this, and I'm going to treat myself to a bath. That's really special. And it's often that we don't do that for ourselves because we think we shouldn't, or we don't have time, or we don't deserve it, or whatever.
Not a fan of Valentine's Day.
You're not a fan of anything. I feel like you might have been raised Jehovah's Witness. You and holidays and birthdays, like, it's not really a thing.
I'm a fan of a lot of things, but I'm not a fan of Valentine's Day because I just remember coming up as a teenager for most of that time feeling such a tremendous dread around Valentine's Day as someone who was not seen as someone that was dateable and was not ever, you know, seen as someone that was cute, that it just was such an incredible letdown because you have all these people in front of you and it's such a normal thing to do. And if anyone had given me a Valentine, it was a joke. And there was a tremendous amount of ridicule. So it was just like another opportunity to ridicule me. I think that Valentine's Day is really painful for a lot of people. And there is a lot of heteronormativity to it. There is a lot of hardship for closeted queer people. There's a lot of hardship for people that are asexual or just are deemed unattractive or undateable for whatever reason. And there is a primacy placed on romantic love that I think is very toxic and that contributes to the way that we view the nuclear family as the ideal model, this model that came out of the 50s as the ideal model. It's problematic for me. So I'm loving the fact that there's an anti-Valentine's Day ball, and this is coming from someone who's part, and I'm partnered in the sense of feeling like celebrate your different kinds of partnerships. If you're poly, if you're single, if you're dating, if you just want to go out and have a good time with your friends, if you just want to express the love that you have for yourself, and if you are able to transform the actual Valentine's Day into an opportunity to do that, by all means. I don't really see that as being the a major expression in Valentine's Day for people that, oh, it's the time for self-care. Oh, it's the time to look at all of my relationships, no matter what kind of love and form they come in. I see it as a time when people really place high value on romantic partnerships, whether they be substandard or not.
I think that's antiquated. I think that today, much more than even just 10 years ago, people are placing emphasis on the different opportunities that Valentine's Day offers. And I'm just a person who doesn't believe in anti. Like, if your anti still uses the word, then how anti are you really? That seems a bit faux to me. But okay, do your anti Valentine's Day ball. Have fun. Well, that's all for this week. If you would like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us and drop by our Patreon page, patreon.com/thequeertruth, and donate. Help us stay afloat, keeping up the quality of these podcasts. Until next time, peace out.